on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Grammar Girl here. I'm Mignon Fogarty, and you can think of me as your friendly guide to the English language. We talk about writing, history, rules, and other cool stuff. Today, we'll talk about the interesting origin of the word freedom and about weird sentences with double subjects. But first, thanks to Elaine, who listened to the episode a few weeks ago about healthy versus healthfully, and let me know that in the UK, people would also use healthfully. For example, to say they ate healthily. I don't think I've ever heard that word before, but I did a Google book search, and it does look like healthily is much more common in British English than in American English. So there you go. And thanks again. Given that it's almost the 4th of July, it's not surprising that the words free or freedom are coming up quite a bit. To most in the United States, Independence Day celebrates the nation's freedom, and being free refers to having the right to choose for yourself how to live or act. But for much of the ancient path that free traveled on its way into English, it meant something strikingly different. The fundamental sense of the term as used today is to not be under the control of another, in other words, to be free. Looking at early biblical and philosophical translations as cited in the Oxford English Dictionary, we find this meaning dates all the way back to the Old English period, the period before 1100. At that time, it appeared as the adjective freo, meaning free from servitude, or as the related noun freodom. But beyond this very modern sense, we also see it used to describe being of noble birth, of high status. Chaucer used it in this way when describing the historical figure Alexander the Great in the Monk's Tale. He of knighthood and of freedom flower, pointing him out as the blossom of knighthood and nobility. Though less common, it can be seen used this way even before Chaucer's time in some Old English biblical texts. Most far afield from how we use it in English today, there was also an Old English verb, freon, that was used primarily with the sense of to love. In Precepts, an Old English religious poem, the verb reminds readers of the necessity of cherishing or honoring one's parents. Fader and moder, freo thu mead heorten. Love with your heart. Freo thu mead heorten. However, by Middle English, it no longer carried this loving sense, having been replaced with the meaning of to make free, influenced by the meaning of the adjective. In other words, modern freedom won out over love freedom. But why did all these related forms evolve to have such different meanings in the early days? Well, looking at the number of closely related forms found across other Germanic languages, the word free existed long before English did. For instance, in modern German, we find frei, or in Dutch, vrij, V-R-I-J. These are what linguists call cognate forms, or words that are etymologically related, suggesting the word was inherited from their source language called Proto-Germanic. If we travel further back than Proto-Germanic, there are cognates or etymological relatives in even older languages, such as Sanskrit, for example, priya, which means beloved. This has led scholars to suggest that the original root form came from Indo-European, a language hypothesized to have existed more than 6,000 years ago, spawning not just the Germanic line of languages, but also most European languages and a number of Asian languages. In Indo-European, the reconstructed or hypothesized root form was PRI, forming words that carried the meaning to love. This original meaning only sticks around in the verb form in Old English and was completely lost by the time we arrive in Shakespeare's day. Perhaps less surprising in etymological development, given the warm, loving fuzzies it still gives off, the English word friend comes from this same Indo-European root. Though it may be hard to imagine, the concept of freedom that we celebrate on Independence Day did come from a place of love through a circuitous but fascinating path. In its Indo-European days, it's thought to have referred to loved ones you were connected to by blood or as free members of a clan. Who was left out of the loving circle? Those who were enslaved. In other words, not free, not loved. As time went on, the meaning took on the connotation of having higher status or noble birth. Again, free in the sense of being born in a position that put you above those in bondage or servitude. For instance, it's been suggested that a derivative Proto-Germanic word, frias, was used in the same sense of beloved member of one's clan. And even in some Old English writings, we find some vestige of this meaning. For instance, in Beowulf, the verb freagon is used with the meaning of familial love, translating roughly as, "Now I take you, Beowulf, to love, freagon, like a son." So these meanings, that of love and that of not being enslaved, are all connected, but over time and through the process of linguistic innovation, the meanings split so that some etymological relatives, such as friend, retained the loving meaning, while others only retained the not enslaved or under someone else's control meaning. Perhaps during troubled political times where many argue over what freedom means, understanding how the word was built from a foundation of love can remind us of the essence of what it truly means to be free. But as important is the takeaway that in earlier times, this foundation excluded those who weren't seen as worthy. We can certainly hope that it's not just our language that's evolved to embrace freedom for all. That segment was written by Valerie Fridland, who's a professor of linguistics at the University of Nevada in Reno and the author of a forthcoming language book called, like literally, dude, about all the speech habits we love to hate. You can find her at ValerieFridland.com or on Twitter as FridlandValerie. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. I've been trying to figure out how to just find more time in my day. And you know what? Factor's ready-to-eat meals come to my door and are on the table in 2 minutes. No more grocery shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleanup. Creamy Parmesan chicken, turkey chili and zucchini with ancho lime crema. These chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals are delicious and take no time at all. Just heat them up and savor the good stuff. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/grammar50 and use the code grammar50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's the code grammar50 at factormeals.com/grammar50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box where your subscription is active.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
A listener named Tom wrote in with a question about repeated subjects. He enjoys listening to the Planet Money podcast, which explains economics in everyday language. But he's noticed that the hosts often repeat the subject of a sentence. Here are two examples from an episode from a while ago that occurred one right after the other. This whole fight, it doesn't matter for the deficit. This year's federal deficit, it is about $1.5 trillion. In his email, Tom writes, quote, "Their constant use of a double subject makes me crazy. I'd like to persuade the people who do this podcast to mend their ways just a little bit. Can you help?" Unquote. Well, the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language refers to this kind of sentence as left dislocation, which sounds unpleasantly like something that happened to one of my friends during a ski trip. In our first example, the noun phrase, "this whole fight," has been moved or dislocated to the beginning of the sentence, which is on the far left when the sentence is written out in a standard left-to-right fashion. This dislocated noun phrase has been replaced in the rest of the sentence by the pronoun it, so that we end up with the double subject that's bothering Tom. This whole fight, it doesn't matter for the deficit. But left dislocation doesn't just happen with subjects. You can also find it with direct objects. For example, at a baseball game, you might hear, "cold beer, you want it, I got it." The direct object of want is cold beer. But instead of saying, "you want cold beer, I got it," the vendor dislocates cold beer to the front of the sentence and fills the direct object position with the pronoun it. Cold beer, you want it, I got it. You can also left dislocate the object of a preposition. Take this sentence, "my brother, a scout, came looking for him at the football game." Here, the left dislocated noun phrase, "my brother," is repeated in the rest of the sentence as him, the object of the preposition for. "My brother, a scout, came looking for him at the football game." You can left dislocate indirect objects too, as in, "that drunk guy who kept trying to pick a fight, the police gave him a citation for disorderly conduct." The left dislocated noun phrase is "that drunk guy who kept trying to pick a fight," and it's repeated in the rest of the sentence as the indirect object him. The police gave him a citation. You can even left dislocate noun phrases that would have been possessive if they stayed in their usual location. For example, in the sentence, "that woman who just moved in, it turns out her daughter is a Girl Scout." The left dislocated noun phrase is "that woman who just moved in," and it's repeated in the rest of the sentence as the possessive pronoun her. It turns out her daughter is a Girl Scout. Left dislocation is considered informal English because the dislocated noun phrase just sits there at the beginning of the sentence, syntactically disconnected from the rest of it. Or worse, the left dislocated phrase may even turn into a sentence fragment. Or worse, the left dislocated phrase may even turn into a sentence fragment if you separate it completely from the rest of the sentence with a period or exclamation point. In our cold beer example, "cold beer, you want it? I got it." Cold beer is a sentence fragment. So why would someone use left dislocation? For one thing, left dislocation is useful if you have a noun phrase that would sound awkward if it stayed in its expected position. With our example, "that woman I see at the gym every day, it turns out her daughter is a Girl Scout." It would be pretty awkward to say, "that woman I see at the gym every day's daughter is a Girl Scout." Another benefit of left dislocation is that it makes it easier for a listener to process a sentence. Sentences are easier to understand if they present old information first and new information later. To see how left dislocation lets sentences do this, let's take another example from the Planet Money episode. The people who are less price sensitive, who are willing to pay more, well, they just don't spend that time and they pay full price. When you say, the people who are less price sensitive, who are willing to pay more, you're introducing a new piece of information. Then when you repeat it as the pronoun they, it's now old information, and it's easier to process with the new information about how they end up paying full price. Finally, because sentences with left dislocation are considered informal, they can set a friendly tone in presentations that are trying to make things simple and fun, like the Planet Money podcast. When I listen to Planet Money, it sounds as if the hosts are having an unscripted conversation, even though each episode is carefully researched and planned. Even with those advantages, left dislocation is still considered informal, so you should avoid it in formal writing. It's more appropriate in places like advertising copy, dialogue, or speech. But as Tom points out, even in speech, left dislocation can become a distraction if it's overused. In our first example, this whole fight, it doesn't matter for the deficit, the dislocated noun phrase isn't really long enough to make dislocation worthwhile, and it's not introducing a new topic either. It's just part of their conversational style, a style that is unfortunately driving Tom bonkers. Left dislocation, it's a useful rhetorical tool, but limit it to your informal writing or speech. Even then, use it sparingly to preserve your listener's sanity. That segment was written by Neil Whitman, an independent writer and consultant specializing in language and grammar and a member of the Reynoldsburg, Ohio School Board. You can search for him by name on Facebook or find him on Twitter as Literal Minded and on his blog at literalminded.wordpress.com. Finally, I have a Familect story.
Hello, I have a story of a Familect of our own. It happens to also be an onomatopoeia. It was FOOP, F-O-O-P. It essentially was a verb that meant to strike someone with a pillow. It was a pillow fight word. That's our story. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for that story. I'm imagining pillow fights now. FOOP. If you want to call with the story of your Familect, a word your family and only your family uses, you can leave a voicemail at 833-214-GIRL, and I might play it on the show. Grammar Girl is a quick and dirty tips podcast. Thanks to my audio engineer, Nathan Sims, and my editor, Adam Cecil. Our ad operations specialist is Morgan Christensen, and our digital operations specialist is Holly Hutchings. Our marketing and publicity assistant is Davina Tomlin, and our intern is Brendan Pika, who says he's been fortunate enough to travel quite a bit within the United States, and his favorite place is Washington State, which he'll be traveling back to over Independence Day this year. Have a great trip, Brendan. I'm Mignon Fogarty, better known as Grammar Girl. That's all. Thanks for listening.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey, it's Mignon. If you want to do more to hone your communication skills, then check out Think Fast, Talk Smart, produced by the Stanford Graduate School of Business and hosted by my friend and Stanford lecturer, Matt Abrahams. You may remember Matt from his interview on the show back in September when he shared his top tips for becoming a better writer and speaker. Think Fast, Talk Smart is his Webby award-winning podcast, which has been downloaded 41 million times and has been the number one career podcast in more than 95 countries. So you know it's worth your time. Whether you're making a wedding toast or presenting at work, strong speaking skills are critical to success in business and in life, which is why Matt sits down with experts every week to talk about the best tips to unlock your communication potential. Hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, speechwriter and best-selling author Dan Pink on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. So what are you waiting for? Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube, and tell Matt I said hi.